Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another Mining Stock Education Expert interview. I'm speaking with professional mining stock investor and newsletter writer David Earthly about gold and gold equities today. You can learn more about David and his newsletter at juniorminerjunkie.com. David, thanks for coming on the program.
Oh, thanks for having me again, Bill. Always nice to talk to you.
I'd like to begin by getting your outlook for gold and the junior gold equities now that it's in May. The saying is sell in May and go away, and sometimes the expectation is the summer doldrums. So what is your outlook for these next 3 months? I listened to Gwen Preston recently in a video, and she said she's expecting gold to be sideways strong, was the phrase that she used. What's your perspective?
Oh, I'd love sideways strong as opposed to just sideways boring and lower, and which is what's been happening with a lot of these juniors. You notice the GDX and the GDXJ have done rather well since I believe they both bottomed on that February 9th spike low we had when we had the global equity panic back in toward the end of January and into the first few weeks of February. Everything bottomed on the same day. You had the Dow, the S&P, and the GDX and the GDXJ. They all spiked and reversed on that day. And the GDX and the GDX did it in the last half hour of trade. You had a huge volume reversal on the last half hour of trade on February 9th. So I believe that was the low in the ETF. And since that low, you've had the GDX and the GDXJ both have been carving out a bottom, and they've been making higher lows. But you have a lot of these highly speculative junior resource stocks, which have been trending lower and haven't been getting many bids. And I think the reason for that is the crypto space has perked up again, and the marijuana space has perked up again, and a lot of the capital that would normally come into these highly speculative resource juniors are going into those sectors instead. So I think it's just it's been a boredom bottom. I've been calling it the boredom bottom going on in the GDX and the GDXJ. But the highly speculative juniors, they just haven't been getting any bids. So if you do your due diligence and you get in and you get into these companies that have plenty of cash, really good properties, really good management, you just buy them when they're being sold down like this on valuation fundamentals, and just be very patient.
There's one microcap junior developer that has a significant resource in South America that I'm invested in. And I spent about a half an hour on the phone with the IR person this week because I've been quite frustrated with the lack of interest, and it is a pre-revenue mm-hmm. company. So they don't have that much cash, even though they have verified gold in the ground. Man, the share price just keeps going lower and lower. So even if gold goes sideways because they don't have much cash, the share price is just getting hit, and it's quite frustrating.
Yeah, you just gotta if you want to take advantage of this situation, you gotta make sure that they have plenty of cash. They're gonna have some news flow. They have a really good management team. They have a tight share structure, and they're fundamentally cheap.
One of the most interesting things that has happened in the last week or so in the junior mining sector is Anaconda Mining's attempted hostile takeover of Maritime Resources Corporation. Anaconda's offering a premium takeover bid to acquire all the issued and outstanding common shares of Maritime in exchange for a consideration of 0.39 of a common share of Anaconda for each Maritime share. And the Anaconda management in their press releases, the YouTube video that they release, they are really pounding Maritime's mm-hmm. management and accusing them essentially
and of shareholders.
And shareholders. Yeah. So I shared with you before we hit record that this has been quite amusing to me. What's your take on this situation?
Yeah, I've been following it as well, and it's been I've been kind of laughing along with it also. I really think I'm kind of I'm on Anaconda's side here. I think it does make sense for them to take it over. And I do think eventually that will probably happen. So this is setting up a good arbitrage trade here. If you want to take a chance on buying some Maritime here, I know they just did a highly dilutive finance, but the share price is trading less than what the offer is. But you know, the Anaconda share price has been trending down as well, and I think a big reason for the Anaconda share price trending down is because that big pop you had to the 54 cent area at the beginning of the year was a combination of the sector and a combination of some newsletter writers. I know Bob Moriarty did a big piece on it, and some other newsletter writers got onto it. And there's a lot of retail in this stock because 87% of it is retail investors, which is a reason why, a big reason why I have yet to take the plunge and buy some shares. I would like to see more institutional investors in this stock. I'd like to see more strong hands in the stock before I buy it. I like everything else about it. They did the share rollback at just the right time that needed to happen, but they're going to be diluted again, you know, when they take over this, when they take over, if they're successful in taking over Maritime. But if I wanted to buy it, I would buy the Maritime shares here because I think that takeover will eventually happen.
If we look at this isolated takeover attempt, the microcosm of it, is there anything we can extrapolate out in saying it speaks to broader what's going on in the sector?
Yeah, I mean, it was announced on the same day that a few other mergers or a few other acquisitions were announced. I did a story on it. When it happened, I called it Minor Merger Monday because it happened on a Monday. And we had Aleo taking over Rypatch. And then the other one was Hecla taking over Klondex. And those all three of those were announced on the same day. And we've started to see some merger news this week again also with Lundin and Eurosun trying to take over Nevsun, mm-hmm. and then Nevsun immediately rejecting it. And looking at the Nevsun share price here again today, it's come off a bit now, but I know there was some scuttlebutt that maybe this might spark a bidding war for Nevsun, even though it's not officially for sale. That remains to be seen. I know Lundin's been trying to get a hold of that Serbian deposit for a long time now. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. But I've just been waiting for that one big high profile merger to happen in the sector to kick off another merger and acquisition spree here in the sector, because we all know it's going to happen. We just don't know when.
Regarding hostile takeover attempts in your 16 plus years of observing the mining sector, do you see them occurring more at like this bounce off the bottom, trending sideways? Where do they most frequently occur in the cycle?
Yeah, they most frequently occur when you have extreme undervaluation here, you know, and that's what we have. You know, I mean, let's face it, this is the last deep value sector left in the marketplace. I mean, besides maybe ags, but I mean, everything else has taken off except for the mining sector. And we know that all these majors, they need to replace their high grade ounces. They've got plenty of uneconomic ounces on the books from their last foray into trying to add ounces by buying low-grade bulk tonnage deposits back in 2010. So a lot of those deposits are still on the books, and they need economic ounces right now. And we know this is going to happen. Like I said, we just don't know when. And the extreme undervaluation here continues. I mean, if you take a look at the XAU in relation to the gold price for the past 23 years, the miners have been in a bear market in relation to the gold price. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. They've just continued to go lower and lower and lower. And part of that is due to the majors, you know, diluting their stock to buy these crappy deposits. And, It's just something that continues, and it's something that will turn around. We just don't know when.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to a company that you and I both own shares in, U.S. Gold Corp. They have the Copper King Wyoming copper gold development property and then exploration properties in Nevada. I wanted you to share with listeners the dynamics of owning this. Now it's about a $20 million market cap. It's a pre-revenue development exploration gold company, but it's traded on a major exchange, the NASDAQ, with a very tight share structure of less than 15 million shares. This is a complete, and it's not traded in Canada, so this is a completely different beast. And early mid-December, we were at $1.25 a share. A month later, we were over $3 a share. A month later, we were back close to $1.25 again. So it's been a roller coaster. Could you comment on that, please?
Sure. I mean, I rode that whole roller coaster. You know, I was fortunate enough to buy it in December, at the lows, and then watched it run up, and I know a lot of some of that run up was pump, was paid for promotion. And then I watched it go right back down again. I mean, when this is a very unusual situation. I mean, first of all, it's very unusual to have a gold company on the NASDAQ. Second of all, it's very unusual to have a gold company on a major exchange without having a Canadian listing. So, what you have happen here is the short interest in this stock is well over 7%. You have shorts pressuring the stock at a time when the sector is being pressured, and also what we spoke about earlier in this interview about lack of interest in highly speculative juniors with no cash flow. So, when this happens, you have the shorts taking control, and they're unable to get any help from up north because Canadians can't buy it on their exchanges because it's not listed. So, then you just have extreme undervaluation. I mean, the company is solid financially, and you add on top of that no news flow. The company has had no news flow. So, they've got, I think they've got 7, 8 million cash. The PEA on Copper King alone, you know, the NAV on that is what, 5, 6 times the share price right now. So you just, this is something that you buy and you stick it in your drawer and you don't think about it because, you know, they have enough cash for the next definitely for the rest of the year, probably well into 2019. If you believe the sector is going to break out like I do at some point between now and the middle of 2019, this stock will fly eventually because it's got the name US in it. It's got the name gold in it, and it's on a major exchange with a tight share structure. So, excuse me, US investors are going to be looking for gold companies to invest in. They're going to see this and they're going to say, wow, I'm going to buy this. And since there's only 14 million shares, it won't take long for it to get over $4 a share. And once it gets over $4 a share, the US funds can invest in it because it's on a because it has a big board listing. And there's very few big board listing gold company, junior gold companies to choose from for funds. So when we finally get the retail market back into this sector in a much bigger way, these funds are going to be looking for gold investments in the junior space to invest in, and there's just not that many with a big board listing.
David, I listened to an interview recently within the last week, post your site visit to Northern Empire's property, Gold Explorer in Nevada. And that I shared with you, that was the most excited I've ever heard you speaking in an interview about a company. And can you share with us what you observed there? And also my follow-up questions would be, as a private investor, have you ever gone on a site visit and then sold the stock you owned in the company or decided not to buy after you went on the site visit? And what can you learn as a private investor by going on these site visits?
Well, I guess I'll answer the last one first. The site visits, I really pick and choose on site visits I go on because I already go to at least four conventions every year traveling. And I have a 5-year-old, and I don't like to be away from him for that long. So, I really pick and choose the site visits I go on. So I guess my answer would be no. I've never been on a site visit that I said, "Oh wow, this just isn't going to work for me. I'm going to sell my shares, or I'm not going to invest in this company. Because I really do my due diligence and make sure that it's a site visit that I don't want to be wasting my time, basically. But I only do a few a year. But this one, Doug Kirst, the executive chairman, the guy that put the company together, I've known him for a while. He made me money in international royalty. He made me money in new market gold. I mean, he used to be a mining analyst. I love picking his brain when I have a chance to talk to him. And I was able to pick his brain for like 4 or 5 hours during this site visit, and it was fantastic. I just love speaking with highly intelligent people in the mining sector that really know what they're doing, and he's one of them. New Market Gold was, I was a Crocodile Gold shareholder, and New Market bought it, and then Kirkland Lake took over New Market for $1 billion. And that was his last venture. And he spent months poring over thousands of projects looking for the right one. And once I went out to the site visit, I understood right away why he picked this one. I mean, this one ticks all the boxes. You know, it's in Nevada. It's 141 square kilometer land package, and Barrick Gold has built an airstrip right next to the project for their projects to fly in executives. They control all the water rights on the property. There's no grazing rights on the property. The Sterling Mine, even if they wanted to put it in production now, which obviously, of course, they don't, because they're company builders. You know, they want to prove up a property, get a major interested, and sell it. But even if they wanted to start up the Sterling Mine right now, it's profitable at $1,000 an ounce gold, and there's already what 300 or so thousand ounces there. And this is something that they've basically taken the risk out of the gold price. Let's say the gold price does shoot down to $1,000, like some people think it will. They would be able to basically say, you know what, we're going to stop drilling for anything more right now, and we're just going to go ahead and mine this thing and make a bit of money and just wait for the gold price to come back up to find more ounces. They have that option. You know, that's rare. And what really was amazing to me, it still is amazing to me, is the fact that Corvus Gold, which I'm sure your listeners are familiar with, has control of the Motherlode pit, which is on basically surrounded by Northern Empire's land claims. It's a little pit in the middle of their huge property. And Corvus has been pulling up some nice grades. They got some nice hits. And the Corvus market cap is now well over $300 million. And the Northern Empire market cap is less than $100 million. And it's really fascinating to me on paper. But when you get out there and you see it, you just shake your head and you go, wow, really? I mean, Northern Empire already has 700,000 ounces proven up at Crown Block of deposits in that area. And one of them is right next to the Motherlode pit. As a matter of fact, 10% of the Motherlode pit is on Northern Empire's claims. So it's really going to be interesting how this is going to play out in the future, because it is my belief that eventually a major like Barrick or Newmont or somebody is going to come in and buy that entire district. But first, Northern Empire is obviously going to have to prove that there's at least 2 million ounces there, which is highly likely with what they've already, with all the targets they have and what's already there. And like I said, these guys are professional mine builders. They've done it before. The share structure is super tight. Management owns, I think, 11%, and they have plenty of cash. They got $16 million. They've got their drill program right now that's ongoing. They have They've completed 2/3 of the current program. They've reported 1/3 of those results, and they have another third in the lab. And the assay turnaround there is just 2 to 4 weeks.
Wow,
And
that's quick.
it's nothing. And their drilling cost is $125 a meter all in. So, and once this drill program is completed, they'll have about $6 million left in the treasury. Then they're gonna release an updated resource from what they've drilled already. Remember, they've already got almost 1 million ounces when you combine Sterling and Crown Block. So, once they've announced that resource, they'll raise another 20 to 25 million more and announce another 50,000-meter drill program. And like I said, these guys have done this before. They're not going to overdrill. They're not going to do something like Gold Standard Ventures did, which is dilute the heck out of shareholders, overdrill the property, and now they've got a blown out share structure. What these guys are going to do is they're going to drill to proof of concept, right? And that way, you just drill enough to prove what's there. And then once they get 2 million ounces, they're gonna have some major interest. Majors are gonna be interested in this thing.
Do you see a bidding war? As you're talking, I'm just thinking if everything goes well for them, and this could end up with a bidding war for the property and the project.
Well, who knows? I mean, who knows? It all depends. Because if you look at when this might happen, which might be a year or two down the road. And where's the gold price gonna be a year or two down the road? Where's the sector gonna be a year or two down the road? Where are market caps going to be a year or two down the road as far as what some of these juniors are doing with what they've got? So who knows? I can't speculate on that. All I can speculate on is they have the right team, they have the right ownership, they have the right share structure, they have the right property in the right jurisdiction. So this is why I was sounding so excited. I mean, there's very few projects out there that tick all the boxes. And this is one of them, as far as I'm concerned.
David, before you go, do you have any parting advice in light of what we've spoken about today?
Oh, geez, just risk management is, job number one, should be your job number one if you're playing in this sector. Just manage your risk because, with what's going on, like I said, in the pot in the crypto space, taking a lot of the money away from these things, you can't get frustrated. If you understand what's happening, and you have an idea of where you think the gold price is going to be, you just got to remain patient, and you got to do your due diligence, and you got to manage your risk.
I urge all listeners to go to juniorminerjunkie.com. There you can sign up. David has a free email where he'll send you his weekly Kitco editorial directly to your inbox. And then also you can learn more about his paid-for subscription newsletter for those looking for companies to invest in, and basically just to learn from a professional how to invest in the junior mining sector. David gives you his play-by-play, what he's doing with his money, and his overall commentary on the market. And you do get commentary that's not made public via Kitco when you do subscribe to David's paid newsletter. And David, is that newsletter almost filled? Because I know at PDAC you were almost taking on no new subscribers.
Yeah, it's getting close. But lately, new subscribers have been covered with some cancellation. So it's still about 90-95% full. It's funny, the sector started to get a little weak and people started to lose a little interest right when I got near that 200 cap. So it's so which is a good thing, I think, because people can still get in. And I think I have a really good subscriber base. I have a lot of really intelligent subscribers, and it's kind of like a family. I tell them exactly how I feel about all of my positions at all times, and how I feel about the sector, and I try to keep them on top of what's going on in the sector at all times. And also with if a company comes out with a resource update or some drill results that are very good, or something that they should be made aware of right away, I send out an alert right away and let them know about it. So my subscribers are like family to me, and I try to do my best to keep them informed at all times.
David, thank you for taking the time to chat with me today.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot for having me, Bill. Always nice to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.